Welcome back to FTI Consulting's Step Up series, a podcast that explores the buzz of starting up as an entrepreneur, scaling up global companies, and stepping up to the societal challenges that business leadership can help fix. Today, we meet James Swanston, founder of Voyage Control, interviewed by our very own Elizabeth Adams, Senior Managing Director in London.
So, good afternoon, James. Great to have you on the podcast this week. So James is a founder and CEO of a company called Voyage Control, which I shall ask him to tell us a little bit about right now. But welcome and looking forward to chatting to you, James. Thank you.
Thanks, Lizzie. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about what we're up to.
Great stuff. So do you want to give an overview for our listeners of what Voyage Control does, what the original kind of plan was for the company and where you're at now? I know it's been a long journey.
Yes, absolutely. So Voyage Control is a software business which is very focused around logistics and supply chain. We started the events industry in the United Kingdom, but from rolling the platform out in 2013, we now support multiple sectors globally. Construction's the largest sector we support. We have staff in five countries, soon to be eight, and we do a huge amount of work trying to help various industries untangle the various logistics challenges that they have.
How does the software actually work? You know, if you're a client using Voyage Control software, what does it actually do for you? What are the benefits of using it?
So there's a number of elements to that. I sort of liken it operationally to like an air traffic control system for trucks. So all about scheduling deliveries into busy logistics hubs, whether it's a construction site, convention center, a container terminal at a port, or a shopping center. And so that there's a huge amount of opportunity to improve that, both in terms of operational efficiency, improving security, and also reducing the impact of freight on the environment.
You mentioned the environmental impact there. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? It's obviously a very hot topic at the moment. You know, how do companies reduce their overall environmental impact and footprint, particularly as it pertains to the supply chain? So tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so since the business was founded 10 years ago, it's actually been a very important sort of aspiration to focus on this. And actually the original name of the business was Carbon Voyage, which you may or may not remember. So we have, since the platform launched, helped some of our customers report some of their Scope 3 emissions, particularly around freight movements. What we're doing now with our customers is helping them to firstly understand the embodied carbon of what's going through their supply chain, and then also helping to look at how supply chains can reduce their own Scope 1 and 2 emissions in terms of things like water and energy usage. What's been, you know, very heartening to see in the last year, and particularly in the last 6 months, is a lot of very large developers and sort of pension funds and the like have made very significant commitments around net zero emissions. And so it's a constant sort of source of discussion in that we're having with construction companies who a year ago would not have cared about this at all.
So it's a kind of coming of age for the business then, really, which has dovetailed really well with scrutiny from investors and indeed corporates into these sorts of areas.
Absolutely. The big challenge that still exists is whilst a large construction company, for example, may talk about how they want to have net zero emissions by 2040 or 2050, they don't necessarily have the tools or the capabilities internally to do that. And there's still often massive disconnects between the business strategy and what happens tactically on, say, a construction site.
I'd like to change tack a little bit. These podcasts are a way of trying to address how, you know, successful entrepreneurs like you have had a journey of yep. entrepreneurship, you know, from kind of startup through scaling up and then stepping up, to be as successful as you are. I'm really keen to understand a bit more about your decision-making and role as an entrepreneur as you went into the Voyage Control journey, you know, 10 years ago, and perhaps some of the highlights, the highlights and the lowlights of that journey to where you are now 10 years later.
Yeah, I think part of the role of an entrepreneur is to be willing to take risks. And the reality is that maybe a little bit like a scientist running a business, you know, that's brand new and trying to do new things is all about experimentation. some experiments succeed and some fail. And I think inevitably successful entrepreneurs are fortunate enough to sort of succeed more times than they fail. But certainly, you know, every entrepreneur has failed at certain things. It's just try to, have more sort of successes and failures.
So tell us about some failures, James, because I'm sure that, you know, through working through failures, you come out in a more successful point. You've got the learnings from that. And tell us about a couple of your biggest failures, if you like, or where you've had to really kind of rip things up and start again.
Yeah, I lost all my money in my mid-20s, so that was a fairly spectacular sort of lesson for me. And the big lesson then was you must focus on revenue. I think there's too many businesses that focus on getting investment, or growing their teams, and they don't focus on the fundamental requirement to get revenue. And so that's absolutely the most sort of critical thing. Something that I don't necessarily think I've entirely got wrong, although the original iteration of Voyage Control was a problem, and that is that when you're rolling out a new service or product, you have to, you know, do things that are going to provide an immediate benefit to customers, and sort of take them on a journey of doing that. The first version of the business was too much of a leap of faith for people in terms of taxi sharing and everything like that before we pivoted into freight. And if we'd done it in a better way, I think we would have had a lot more traction. And there's, you know, that sort of need to provide a, you know, immediate tangible value to your customer base and grow from there. And certainly linked to that is you need to just roll out products that people are going to use and pay for, rather than try to build a perfect product that, you know, has no traction and you've spent too much money and then you're in trouble. Probably the other big mess that I've constantly made is, you know, hiring. You know, hiring is a real challenge in a startup environment, or indeed any tech company environment. And, you know, there's a mix of challenges about hiring the right people, where you need to hire them. You know, as you know, we did a lot of stuff in the US and have done since 2015, and yeah, that was really difficult as a single founder trying to manage things on both sides of the Atlantic. So that's inevitably a challenge as well. So
that's really, really helpful. I think those are great tips for for wannabe entrepreneurs or those who are going through the scaling up process. Can you tell us then perhaps the flip side of things? And after that, I'd like to come on to investment. What are the real moments of success where you've said, you know what, this is going to work, we've made it, you know, or we're making it. Maybe you're still not at that point yet, but some of the real highlights, I guess, would be good to hear about.
I think, you know, serendipity and making your own luck are really important for anyone trying to build a business. You know, trying to wait for opportunities to come to you is never going to work. We got Langer Rourke as a big customer of ours here in the UK. That came about because I reached out to someone on LinkedIn. We got our first container terminal client in Los Angeles because I reached out to someone who wrote an article. And yeah, you absolutely have to do that, and that is a great way to sort of get some successes. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, particularly in a industry like construction, you just have to do it for enough years to build some credibility and get enough customers. And you have to be absolutely focused on meeting the needs of construction companies and not focused on raising money, because I think you end up in a bit of a challenge where if you're focused on raising money, you're not necessarily focused on meeting the needs of construction companies. And it's incredible to hear other construction tech companies talk about how much money they've raised or how big their teams are, and they haven't really ever spoken about how many customers they have. Mm-hmm. And then the final one, perhaps just in construction again, is sort of going from the point where you're on one or two sites to when you're on 20 or 50 sites, and you're moving from, you know, this is a pilot to here's a big enterprise deal worth, you know, a lot of money. So that's been really fantastic for us as well.
Amazing. That's really helpful. You mentioned investment a few times and said that perhaps it's an area that people focus on a bit too much at the start. They're kind of obsessing about getting the money in instead of figuring out, how the product works and what the customer wants. Who are your investors and what are your plans for scaling up further in terms of fresh investment rounds and so on?
Yeah, so the most important thing is we're focused on being a profitable business. And, you know, looking at a positive EBITDA even, you know, this year. And that's really important. In terms of money we've received to date, we've been very fortunate to get a lot of money from customers who, you know, some of our early customers were happy to pay for product development, which is a great way of getting money. I think getting money into a business has different values. Getting money from customers is way more valuable than getting money from investors, because you're actually proving that someone will pay for your product. You don't do that by getting investment. We have been fortunate to get money from various sort of angels and people that I know. So we haven't actually really taken any institutional money into the business. We recently did two acquisitions, which I got some debt funding in to help do that. But we haven't sort of taken any investment into the business. Going forward, we are looking at taking investment into the business, but only where there are strategic alignments with potential partners and customers, and so on. So it's a little bit of a different story to just going out to a random VC who also doesn't know anything about the industries that we're in.
All right, great insights. Thank you. I'm interested in the fact that obviously Voyage Control exists in different places. So you've had your US exposure and experience, and you've got UK and potentially European exposure as well. I'm interested in your perceptions of the kind of the frameworks for small and medium-sized businesses in the US and the UK, and how they differ, and maybe some pointers for companies that have similar, you know, similar exposure.
I had to recently give a talk to some entrepreneurs who were involved in a Mayor's International Business Program sort of thing in the US. And the big thing I said to that group was the US is completely different from the UK. And going into the US is a lot more expensive and a lot more complex from a regulatory perspective than you would ever think of. And there are just a variety of challenges, whether it's legal or financial, that you have to deal with. I mean, in the US, half of our customers send us checks in the mail, which is sort of somewhat ludicrous, but that's the reality of doing business in the United States. So, and it's a very expensive place to do business, but at the same time, you know, it's such a massive market, you can't ignore it.
So are there any kind of, you know, top tips for governments or policymakers on what they should be doing to support entrepreneurs and small businesses, for example, coming out of COVID? Is there anything you'd like to see change? You know, anything that you would say, hey, you know, government, if you're really looking to attract SMEs, this is what you need to do?
I mean, I think the British government has been fantastic in terms of the funding support available to businesses.
Can you just briefly explain what some of those sources are, if it's not putting you on the spot?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, from at the small end, you've had things like the bounce back loan through to the CBILS, and then things like the Future Fund, which I think is a fantastic idea. And they're great ways of sort of both helping to support businesses financially, but also invest in the potential future of businesses along with others. I think, you know, the last year has been tough for any business, and you know, I think governments just need to be very open to supporting businesses get through what has been a really rough patch. Although obviously not all businesses necessarily can or should survive. I think maybe one area which, you know, is always a challenge is attracting the right talent, both locally and internationally. So just being able to hire the right people can cause issues from a visa perspective. And it's certainly a challenge on both sides of the Atlantic.
And from a communications perspective, James, thinking about the competition that you've encountered, you know, the peer group within the construction sector, are there any hints and tips that you can give to our listeners about how to cut through, how to, you know, really push your USPs to make yourself more attractive to your audiences and customers?
So, and going back to the communications point, the reality is that the marketing material that we have in the UK has to be entirely different from what we have in the US, both in terms of the value propositions, the nature of the presentations we give people. You know, people in the UK love, you know, PowerPoint presentations in the US, people want a one pager, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you need to just understand how you have to communicate to the different audiences in different countries. And it's not just about changing the sort of spelling. So, you know, changing the S's to Z's or Z's and everything. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Anything else that you would like to share on your sort of scaling up, step up journey as an entrepreneur, you know, and CEO of a successful company? Are there any other sort of hints or highlights or tips that you would share?
I think it's just all about being willing to make mistakes and just, you know, persevere with it. Yeah, I've certainly made a lot of mistakes, and it probably at some points might have been easier to pull back and just focus on the UK. But I think ultimately, if you want to be a big business, you do have to expand and take risks and roll with, you know, the ups and downs of crazy entrepreneurial life, sort of, you know, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, as it were.
Very good, very good. Just two quick fire questions. What's your average working day in terms of the hours that you spend working? And secondly, what are you reading at the moment?
Oh, gosh. So in terms of hours, I do during the working week, you know, 16-hour days, sometimes a bit longer, sometimes a bit less. And it's typically split. So just in terms of time zones, if I'm in the UK, I might do something like 5 a.m. through to 2 or 3 p.m. Then I have a bit of an afternoon snooze, and then I have to get up and focus on North America and then sort of back into Asia. So that's what my exciting day sort of looks like. In terms of reading, I'm very bad. I have not read anything for a very long time. So I read a little bit of new stuff and I do read The Economist and stuff, but yeah, I'm very, very terrible in that respect. So
Not to worry. Well, look, James, thank you very much indeed for your time today. It's much appreciated. Great insight and nice to have you on the podcast. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to FTI Consulting Step Up Series. For more information, head to fticommunications.com and subscribe on Audioboom so you never miss an episode.